So, Perek Dalad, Pasuk Chof Zayin, in Sefer Shavuos. Ve'im Hashem l'Aaron, lech l'gras l'mush ha'min bara, ve'elech v'yifkashu bar al-kim v'yish ha'kulay. So Hashem tells Aaron to go ahead and greet Moshe Rabbeinu. And he goes out and greets him. When he sees him, he gives him a big hug and kiss. Vayigad Moshe l'Aaron, it's called Divrei Hashem Shoshlach, it's called Oysa Yisashar Tzivo. So Moshe turns to Aaron and he tells him everything Hashem told him. By the way, this is one of the reasons Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to go ahead and rescue the Jewish people, because he was afraid that Aaron would be upset, him being the older one, and Moshe being the younger one. He would be upset that Moshe was selected to be the Mashiach of Klal Yisrael, even though he was younger. So, if you think about it, if Hashem tells you to do something, right? Hashem tells you to do the Redeemer. Obviously, Hashem took everything into consideration. And he's assuming that he knows that Aaron is older. And still, he tells Aaron to go ahead. He tells Moshe to go ahead and be the Redeemer and not Aaron. So why is Moshe going ahead and disputing Hashem? Maral says this went on for 7 days, back and forth. He's arguing with Hashem. I want you to do it. No, I can't do it. So there are many, many explanations as to why he was arguing with Hashem for so long. One of the reasons given is because, again, because Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that Aaron was going to be upset. So he was faced with a decision to make, right? One decision was, Kum va'ase, go ahead, listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and redeem the Jewish people. The other side was, Shev al ta'ase, don't do anything, because Aaron is going to be upset, right? So when you're facing a situation where it's 50-50, right? 50% tells you, right, you weighed out all the different variables, all the different reasons why to do one thing and not to do the other, right? You weighed out everything, right? In that kind of situation, the klal is, Chazal say, Shev ve'al ta'as ha'adif. When you have two choices of to get up and do and to sit down and not do anything, it's always best to sit down and not do anything. The Gemara in Erevin, Daf Kuf talks about it in regards to a person who's on a tree on Shabbos. Someone who's on a tree on Shabbos. The halacha is that you're not allowed to sit on a tree on Shabbos.
On a what?
And to sit on a tree on Shabbos.
On a what?
On a tree.
On a tree.
A tree.
Oh, a tree. Oh.
A tree, yeah.
Alright, yeah.
Yeah. Right? You're not allowed to sit on a tree. So what happens if someone was sitting on a tree when Shabbos came in? Right? Now he's faced with two choices. Either he can get up and get off the tree, which is an aver in and of itself. It's an aver to get off the tree. Right?
What's the aver for getting off the tree? I mean,
It's considered a violation of Shabbos because you're actively getting off of a tree.
What is it, come under?
You might break a branch, Rabbi. So I don't know.
No, yeah, that's one of them.
Making use of what's the category? Make?
Yeah, you may come to break a branch, but even without that.
Pull the leaf off.
Anyway. You can't hang anything on it.
Right, you can't hang anything on it either. Right, you can't if you have a basket, you can't hang your basket on a branch of a tree. You're not allowed to do that because the tree is considered to be a muktzah.
All right, go ahead.
Can you lean against a tree on Shabbos?
No. You're not allowed to lean against a tree either.
Well, you might knock down something. Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the that's part of it. Yeah. Okay. In any case, so on one end, you're not allowed to get off of a tree, right? But on the other end, you're not allowed to continue sitting on the tree either, right? So some chalukas over there in the Gemara, what you should do? Should you get up and get off the tree, which is an aver in and of itself, or should you sit there, sit on the tree, and do nothing, right? So some chalukas in the Gemara over there. All right, but in any case, Moshe Rabbeinu was over facing the decision of what to do, and therefore, since he figured that there's 50% is telling him yes to do it, 50% is telling him not to do it, The better thing to do is shave the altaisa adif. That's why he refused to listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him to go ahead and redeem the Jewish people.
How does the Gemara get 50-50?
No, I'm just using that Gemara as a case of shave out the source of shave the altaisa adif.
Yeah, get the tree. What's the lav of to get up there and sit there? I mean, what are you doing? Why
to climb on a tree?
It has to be a reason why. So the reason is because maybe you'll move, maybe you knock something down. I can understand that he says over there, don't do anything. Just stay there, because actually just sitting alone, you're not doing anything, but if you try to get off, you knock something down. You know, you do, something will happen that's not supposed to happen.
Hmm.
That's what it seems to me. Why you said, don't do anything over here.
Right.
The idea is, what's wrong with sitting on the tree? I mean, how does that Mechal HaShabbos, just sitting there?
Sitting on a tree is also Mechal HaShabbos.
What is he doing to break the...
Let's see the halacha inside. Let's look at it inside. We'll see the halacha inside.
What's your answer? What's your thought on him?
My thought is that he's the rabbi, and he's going to give you the answer.
I know, but we can talk about it and see what...
It's not proper for me to...
No.
What's that, Martin?
He's asking you to give the answer. You're present. You're the one.
No, please. Go ahead. Speak your mind.
You've got to have one.
Speak your mind.
I will pretend to be humble.
Oh, all right.
It's good practice.
That's a good answer. But if you have a house on a tree?
It's called a tree house.
All right. What if you were on a boat in Shabbos?
That happens.
Yeah. You get off, you stay on. The boat is sinking, what are you supposed to do? You got to swim. Now, you're not allowed to swim. Now, what do you do? All right. I would say you might break a branch. You might pull a leaf off, which you're not allowed to pick.
It's muksa.
Muksa, shmuksa.
Here. Let's see the Zohar inside. Ein oilin be'ilon. You're not allowed to climb on a tree. Bein lach ben yavish.
That I can understand.
Bein nitlim boy. You're not allowed to hang on him, hang on it, or sit on it. Bein mishtamshim b'mechuber l'karka klal. You're not allowed to use for support anything that's connected to the ground. Gzeir Hashem yala v'yitlosh. Right? Again, the gzeir, because you might come to climb on a tree and cause a branch to fall down, like Richie's saying.
Okay. So there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
Not just because you might do something like that there.
Yeah.
Right. Now, so I can understand, he's stuck up there. Right?
Yeah.
And if he doesn't move, nothing's going to happen. He isn't going to be waiting for anything. The gzeir is because he might do something. But if he just sits there and doesn't move, nothing's going to happen.
He can't sit there all day long.
If he gets off, he might not knock something down like this here. And if he moves, something could happen. I mean, that's the reason. So it's better just to sit there.
So let's see.
And nothing could happen.
Let's see. All of Be'ilam B'Shabbos. What if you climbed on a tree on Shabbos?
Yeah.
Which was awesome. What do you do then? Right?
He wasn't supposed to do that in the first place.
All right. He wasn't supposed to do that. What do you do now?
Yeah.
Right? So B'Shoigeg Mutar Lared. If you didn't know that it was Aser, you didn't, or you forgot it was Shabbos, right, then you're allowed to get down. The Mazid Aser Lared. If it's Mazid, you knew that it was wrong, you did it anyway, you're not allowed to get down. But if you didn't know, then you are allowed to get down. Yeah? Says the Mishnah Berurah, B'Shoigeg Mutar Lared. When it's Shoigeg, you're allowed to get down. Why? Even though when you're getting down, you're using the tree, right? You're using the tree for support. You're stepping on it, right? Even by sitting on it, you're still using the tree. Right? So it's worse to sit on it than to get down. If you didn't know what you were doing.
Well, it's the same, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's because you went up there when you weren't supposed to.
Right.
But this here happened when he went up. It was okay. It wasn't Shabbos.
Right.
Now it's Shabbos. So if he gets off, he might be Machal Shabbos by tearing something out of the thing there.
Yeah, you're not allowed to sit on it either.
You're not allowed to sit on it because you climbed up on it.
If
you climbed up by Shmishoigig, he's allowed to get off.
Yeah, but Mazid, you're not allowed to get off.
Mazid is not. That's a different story. This is not Mazid here. He went up there, it was all right. He didn't do anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's up there. So if he's going to get off, even though he shouldn't be sitting there for that day, but it becomes Shoigig. To me, that's what it seems like.
Well, what's the reason that B'meiz you're not allowed to get off? So the Mishnah Berurah says because you give him a knas.
Okay.
You're giving him a fine. You did something wrong, you got to stay there till the end of Shabbos.
Even though he's not supposed to be sitting there.
All right. Next subject. Let's go.
He's giving you an example when
it's half and half, you know, it's better to do nothing. Because if you do one or the other, you might be over something. But if you're doing nothing, it seems that you're not doing anything. You're not allowed to sit there if you climb up there. But if you're up there already, what can you do? Don't do nothing.
Right.
So what we were learning over here, like you wanted to bring a thing over here. Now he's got a thing here that this is it is no right to make him feel bad, and it's not right not to listen to a shem. So, but don't do nothing. So if he doesn't do nothing.
Right, that's why he didn't want to.
He won't be over here and like that.
That's why
I look at it.
Yeah. In any case, so now he's meeting Aaron, and so now pasuk chavtes v'yelach Moshe v'Aaron. Moshe and Aaron go ahead. V'yasu is kol zikenei b'nei Israel. They collect all the elders, all the skenim. Aaron is called Dvarim Shredibar Hashem al Meshav Yas Oisla Isla Inei Ha'am. Aaron tells the Skenim, the rest of the Jewish people, exactly what Hashem said. Oh, it's time finally for the redemption. And he performs the Oisla Isla, the special signs that Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu. V'yam et Ha'am, they believed him right away. V'yishmu kipoka d'Hashem es v'nei Yisrael v'chiros onyom v'yigdu v'yishtachavu. They believe, and they're willing to accept it.
Why do they believe?
Why do they believe?
Yeah, why do they believe right away?
Well, it says that he had the secret. First of all, the fact that he showed them the oisleis, that in and of itself was a sign that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Mashiach.
You talk about the
three miracles of
the tricks.
The tricks, you want to call them the tricks, yeah.
But they've seen, well, I meant they like tricks, but they've seen magicians do things before, so...
Right.
He must have also conveyed some information.
Obviously, yeah.
Besides just the magic.
Right.
I won't call them tricks.
So why were these signs selected in particular, right? Moshe Rabbeinu could have done, Hashem could have given Moshe Rabbeinu any set of tricks or magic.
He gave him the password.
Right, so there's a few things. First of all, that's one thing. We'll get to that.
Well, it's not in order. He gave him the password. Now I believe.
But like you were saying, he obviously conveyed a message when he was giving over these signs, right? What was the first sign? The first sign was he threw the stick down and turned into a snake, and then he grabbed it and it turned back into a snake. The second sign was that he put his hand in his shirt, it turned into saras, then he took it out, right?
Yeah.
Put it back and it came back to normal. The third one was he took water from the Nile, turned it into blood, right? So now if you notice, the third trick, the third miracle did not go back to its original condition, right? The first two, the stick and his hand, did go back to its original status. But the last one didn't. Why not? Because the first two tricks are referring to Bnei Yisrael. The first trick is, Bnei Yisrael are telling Moshe Rabbeinu, yes, maybe Hashem wants to redeem us. However, we are sunken so low, we're so influenced by the Tuma of Mitzrayim, we're not deserving, we're not on a level where we deserve to be redeemed from Mitzrayim. So Hashem is giving Moshe this sign in particular. He takes a staff, right? A staff can be, a stick can be one of two things. It could be a staff to support, that's used for support. It could also be a stick that's used to hit someone, right? Right? And that's why Hashem turns to Moshe and he asks him, what's that in your hand? Remember, Mazeh? And Moshe says, Mate, this is a staff. Not a stick, rather a staff. So you take a staff, you throw it down to the ground, referring to Bnei Yisrael, right? Bnei Yisrael are compared to a staff, right? Something that's from the world of creation, right? Of leaning on, which is creation, right? And you throw it down to the ground, you throw it into the Tuma, into the Artzias, into the Gashmias, into materialism, right? And it turns into a snake. But, however, what happens when you grab it again, it always goes back to a source.
So
referring to the fact that even though Bnei Yisrael are so involved in materialism, when you take them, when you hold on to them, they always return to their source.
Right. They can be redeemed.
They can be redeemed. The second sign is the same idea. Right? They might tell Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, that's something that could be influenced, like some kind of inanimate object. But how about something that's alive, right? That cannot be returned back to its source, right? Because we are Baal Bechira, we're alive, we're human beings, right? We may not be able to return back to our source because we made the wrong choices. We chose to be influenced by the Egyptians. So Hashem is telling Moshe to put his hand in his shirt, turned it into tzaras, right? Right. But still, when you bring it back to its source, it always goes back to its original status, right? So those two first signs are referring to Bnei Yisrael. The last sign, however, is not referring to the Jewish people. It's referring to Mitzrayim. It's referring to the Egyptians. The Egyptians, no matter what you do to them, right? The Nile symbolizes the Egyptians. That was their source of power, one of the sources of power, right? So you're taking blood from the Nile, turn it into blood, and it remains blood. Meaning the Egyptians, no matter what you do to them, they're always going to stay in whatever status they are. There's no returning back to purity. That's why Hashem gave these signs in particular to Moshe Rabbeinu to send a message to the Jewish people.
Yeah, but the Nile did turn back the water after a week or so, didn't it?
Right. But this is before the Makkah of Dam.
That means all right. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and plus he sent what Richard was saying. what Richard was saying, that he gave him the sign of pocket pekadati. That comes later. Pocket pekadati, what's the meaning of pocket pekadati? What's the meaning of pekida?
Sure.
What's pekida? What?
Come to visit you, come to redeem you.
Right. Hashem pocket asarak asharma, right. It's coming to visit you, but it's a visiting in a very on a very intimate level. Meaning, it says the Adam pakad es ishtai, right? When a person is intimate with his wife, he uses the lashon of pakida, right? Meaning it's very intimate, it's very individual, very singular, very 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 geared towards a certain purpose. So what's the whole idea of pocket pekadati? So the Maharal explains that there are different ways a person can relate to different situations. There's re'iya, there's seeing, there's schira, remembering, and there's pekida. Pekida means like to deal with, to address in a very individual on the very individual level, to deal with. Right? So the Maharal explains like this. He says, "Ri'iya, seeing, a person can see a complex picture. He can scan a room, and he could remember all the people that he could recognize all the people that are in the room, right? Right? He can refer to a picture on a very very multiple level. So too, when it comes to remembering, a person can remember a complex situation. He can remember many things at one time, right?" However, pekida is altogether different. Pekida is dealing with something on a very individual level without anything to do with anything else. Right? And the whole geula, the whole redemption of Mitzrayim was done in that fashion. The fashion of pekida, of addressing something on a very individual level. Meaning, Hashem did not punish the Egyptians. He didn't bring on the plagues because he needed the Jewish people to get out. Oh, so I'm gonna distract the Egyptians. Oh, and while they're busy with all the malchus, then I'm gonna sneak up. No. It's nothing to do with anything, right? The Egyptians are gonna be punished because they have to be punished. The Jewish people are gonna be redeemed because they have to be redeemed. Nothing has anything to do with the other, right? Two separate things. That's the whole inyan of pekida. Dealing with something on a very individual level. So too, every single makkah was addressed on a very individual level. Every tiny little thing the Egyptians did to the Jews was addressed surgically and directly without anything else. Right? It wasn't just like, Hashem brought, this like massive plague to impress. Obviously, it was done also to show his complete utter control over the Jewish people. But on a deeper level, it was also dealing with every particular issue that the Egyptians did to the Jews, right? Every tiny little thing the Egyptians did to the Jews was noted, and now during the plagues was being punished for.
They get paid back.
Right. It was paid back. Yeah, it wasn't a word of
no, not paid back just like that, You steal something from me, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, revenge, I'm gonna avenge, the suffering of the Jewish people. It was more than that. Hashem works midah keneged midah, right?
No.
He addresses every single avera in accordance to the way it was done. So that was that's why the whole Geul of Mitzrayim is called Pekida. I'm now addressing every tiny little thing on a very individual level, dealing with every issue on a surgical and particular level.
So it seems that if, say, they came, God says this, they says, okay, go. But that wouldn't work.
Right.
Because they had to be punished for what they did to them.
Right, exactly. That's why, even though Paro was really willing to let the Jewish people go after five makas, right? After five makas, he was, okay, guys, go. That's it. You're done. Can't take it anymore. But Hashem was machbid as liboy, and he made him be. He gave him. There are a few pshatim of how he did it or why he did it. Yeah, you get into the whole issue of free will.
You know, it's like if you've got you have a disease or something. You say you have, what do you call it, you get on your feet, that you have to cut them off. What do I call that?
What? Gangrene.
Huh? Gangrene. Okay. Mm-hmm. Gangrene. Now it's there. If you don't get rid of it, you'll die. So you have to get rid of it. So the same thing, these over here, they did all this stuff, and they have to be punished for it. That's all. And you have no more way of getting away from being punished. You may be forgiven later, but first you still got to be punished for what you did.
Mm-hmm.
You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah. There.
I mean, you got to go through a process of, you know, like this. So you're sick. You have to go. You got to decide. You have to have an operation, and you have to do this, and have to do that, and have to do that, and that, then afterwards, maybe you'll heal. But first, you got to get rid of what's wrong before you can become healed.
Right.
See, that's, you know, you get what I mean?
Yeah. Surah Merah Vasei Toiv. Yeah. First, you have to get rid of the bad part,
that's,
and then you
see all the thing when he's talking about Gehenna. He says that the only people who went to Gehenna, it says that their virtue is much better than their sin. They're good by even 1%. Then they can be cleansed. If you're
right.
Completely sinned, there's nothing to cleanse. Goodbye, you're gone. We
right.
Can't inoperable. Something, you got something that's inoperable. They can't save you anymore. It doesn't
right.
help.
How did Aaron know to go see Moshe?
How do you know they? Do you know they were coming? Good question.
He
I don't
sent
know.
The letter. You know, faxed them what?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You know.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know how you knew that it was coming. But in any case, so now Moshe Rabbeinu is gathering this Kenim, the elders, and he's about to go ahead and come into the palace of Paro. So it says, Moshe and Aaron and all the Shivim Zakenim start walking towards the palace of Paro. And one by one, all the Zakenim are dropping out as they're passing the different alleyways. They're all dropping out. They say
All the entrances are guarded by wild animals and stuff.
Right.
And
right.
They got scared.
Yeah, they were terrified. You know, they knew what a vicious king Paro was. They didn't want to take a chance. So they all dropped out. By the time Moshe and Aaron got to the palace, the only people that remained were Moshe and Aaron. They remained all alone. And like you said, there were vicious animals that were wild animals that were guarding the entrances to the palace, but various nisim occurred, and when Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron went into the palace, all the animals froze. All the animals.
They came down, licked their hands.
Yeah.
I mean, became tame.
Yeah. Became tame, or they froze, and Moshe and Aaron went in all the way into the palace without being harmed. So Medrash says that happened to be that day that Moshe and Aaron came was the birthday of Paro. It was the birthday of Paro.
Yeah, yeah.
And the custom was, back in the day, since Paro was the monarch of the world, he was effectively the most powerful king, right? Egypt was the world power of that generation. It's America of today, right? Because really, much thanks to Yosef. Yosef was the one who brought Mitzrayim to Paro, to power. Because he was the one who managed to save all the food. And during the years of famine, all the countries came to Mitzrayim to get some food. And they effectively became slaves to Paro. In any case, Mitzrayim was the world power of that generation. And the custom was that every single king from every single province would come
and
present a present. The present contained a golden crown that was crafted by the craftsmen of his country, and a poem describing how great and how great Paro was. So as this ceremony is going on, right, every king is approaching Paro, presenting his crown, reading out the poem. In walk these two old, majestic-looking Jews with long white beards, and Paro turns to them and he says, "Who are you? Who sent you? Right? Which king are you being sent by?" So Moshe says, "We were sent by Hashem, who is the God of the heavens and the earth. He created the heavens and the earth, and rules over the whole world." So Moshe, Paro reaches for his book of kings. He looks for this king Hashem. He's like, doesn't show up in this book. Never heard of him, right? I don't know who he is. So he says, oh, because I don't know who he is, you guys have to go to the end of the line, right? I don't know who you are. I don't know who he sent you. Go to the end of the line. You're going to wait until everybody else finishes. And when everybody else finishes, then I'm going to talk to you. So Moshe and Aaron have no choice. They wait. He makes them wait until the end. When they finally finish, they approach Paro, and Paro says, "Okay, where's your crown? No crown. Where's your poem? No poem. They came empty-handed, without anything." And Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Okay, you have to send it to the Jewish people. Hashem told us to tell you." So Paro's like, "No, not happening." So at which point, Aaron pulls out his staff, and he takes his staff, he throws it onto the ground, and it turns into a snake. Not only is Paro not impressed, but he goes out and he calls little kids. Again, Mitzrayim was the center of witchcraft and wizardry of those days. And they used to teach even little kids how to do magic tricks, Martin, right? Or magic tricks, or... Magic, whatever you want to call it. It was really much more than magic. It was really they're able to tap into koyches atuma, sorcery, and use the koyches atuma or even the shadim, these demons, and they can control the demons somehow and have them go ahead and perform these different things. So therefore, that when they used to teach little kids, these little kids were the ones who were performing this. And apparently, some of the most skilled children were the kids of Paro. So Paro goes out and he calls over his little kids, his children, and he says, "Oh, go ahead. Show this guy what you've got." So they go ahead, these little kids, and they perform exactly the same trick that Aaron does, right? They take a staff, you throw it on the ground, and it turns into a snake. So Paro says, "See, you think you guys are so cool? You can turn a staff into a snake, right? That's nothing. Even little kids can do that. Who do you think you are?"
Yeah, I also said my wife can do it too.
Right, my wife can do it too, right? What do you guys think you are? So in any case, so then Aaron goes ahead, he grabs the end of his snake, turns it back into a staff, and while it's a staff, the staff goes ahead and eats all the other snakes that are slithering there on the floor. At that point, Paro is terrified, because now he says, "Oh, what if Aaron goes ahead and decides to tell his stick/snake to swallow me and my throne? There was no one that could stop him." And if you notice, from then on, Paro does not outright contradict Moshe at all. Right? When Moshe tells him to send out the Jewish people, he doesn't say no. He tries to procrastinate. "Yeah, well, who wants to go? Maybe only the men have to go. How long do you have to go? Only for 3 days." He tries to negotiate. He tries to haggle. Right? But he never outright refuses Moshe Rabbeinu again, because he's terrified and he knows that this the staff can go over and swallow him and his throat. Okay, we have to stop here. It's time for Marv. But We did cover a lot of ground. We didn't get to the Makkos yet, but maybe
okay,
next year.
We'll get to that next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday. Come to my Seder, we'll do that.